You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is The Battle. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
The synopsis for tonight's show is when a group of Ferengi present Captain Picard with the derelict remains of his old ship, he begins to lose himself in the past. This is the ninth episode of the season one of Star Trek The Next Generation. It was written by Larry Forrester and directed by Rob Bowman. Guest stars for tonight's episode are Frank Corsentino as Damon Bach, Doug Warhit as First Officer Kazago, and Robert Towers as Rata. I guess maybe Second Officer? So what do we think about this episode? The Ferengi are better in this episode than they were in the past episodes. They're still a little hunched over, but they'll be more wrecked later on in future episodes. It's your general revenge episode. And what do you get from revenge? Never anything good. What about you, James?
Well, I don't think you needed the Ferengi in this episode at all. I think you could have replaced the Ferengi with any species of the week. So I don't think the fact that it's a Ferengi episode is kind of by the by. Now, I've always had a little bit of a soft spot for this episode. And I kind of enjoy it a little. In particular, like I like the flashback and learning about Picard's his career pre Enterprise. So I think I might be a little bit soft on this one. Okay, but before we get into our in-depth thoughts on this episode, we will first have a bit of feedback from the forums, and in particular today, appropriately, we're going to be reading feedback from The Last Outpost, which was episode 5 and also the first to feature the Ferengi. Now, the first comment on the forum comes from Captain Proton, and he says, "I absolutely love this episode. I know the Ferengis are acting like weirdos, and it wasn't made to make me laugh, but it does, and I do love to laugh. I love their whips. I get bored with the idea that the guns of the future are basically like the guns of today, and these whips are outside of the box, and I can appreciate that fully. I also dig the portal. His costume is wanting, but not his performance or makeup. The test of Riker is pure Star Trek, and storytelling-wise, this mention of Sun Tzu is nothing but payoff from earlier in the episode. Also, later in the series, during the episode Gambit, Picard will face a similar test, but I would put Riker's test above Picard, simply because the awesome battle axe portal has rocks the hell out of some dumb Vulcan thought weapon. I agree that the moral superiority of Riker and Portal is a bit ham-fisted and slightly smug, but Trek is always showing us how much better humans are than everyone else, even if it doesn't always tell us this. All in all, this is one of those episodes of Season 1 that is widely crapped on all over the internet, but hardly deserves it, minus one bad choice of the director. It's great Trek. I guess it might be obvious now, Doc, but I'm at least as big as an apologist of Season 1 as you. But I was a young boy when I first saw these episodes, and they are formative impact on my life. It might seem silly, but I never would have read The Art of War by Sun Tzu had I not seen this episode. I might not have thought so highly of Indiana Jones' whip had I not seen the Ferengi whip it wielded one first. And I surely wouldn't have thought so highly of my father's wisdom that it takes a bigger man to walk away from a fight than to throw the first punts. Weird how a TV show can do that to you, but hey, it's Trek."
You gotta know when to hold them and know when to fold them. You know, it's interesting that you say, Ben, that it makes the humans more superior than everybody else, because you're currently doing Star Trek Voyager, which you guys have said many times that it's the other way around. The humans were supposed to take a back seat to all the aliens. So it's an interesting perspective, but yes, you're right. In Next Generation, humans are superior. We know everything. We're evolved. And all the other species, well, they could learn a lot from us. That's what it seems. All right, Medic 1849 says, I concur with the thoughts of this episode. Good first half, crappy second half. All I have to say is, thank goodness for DS9. They saved Ferengi and developed them into some of the most memorable and lovable characters in Trek. I wonder if Blair likes the Magnificent Ferengi, because I do.
Okay, I know that not everyone loves the Magnificent Ferengi, but I'm not entirely sure that anyone that's right-thinking doesn't like the Magnificent Ferengi. I think it's a great episode, and it's a... I actually like a lot of the Ferengi episodes on DS9, and I haven't... Perhaps I didn't read enough forum posts to tell me that I shouldn't. Magnificent Ferengi is good. Bar Association's good. Even things like Family Business is good. I'm not going to go as far as the... what is it?
The Moogie which episodes?
Which is the cross-dressing one?
Oh, is yeah.
Ferengi love songs? That doesn't sound
that
right.
That could be, yeah. When a female pretends to be the male to get with Quark.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's rules of acquisition. But anyway, you know, that's certainly not a turnoff for me. I do like my fair share of Ferengi.
Oh, right. You're talking when Quark cross-dresses.
Indeed.
Yeah. You know what would be interesting? I'm going to ask you a question, James, and I'm going to ask everybody, and I'd like to get a response in the feedback for this episode. But do you think once in a while, what if we just went completely off TNG and did an episode review of some other Star Trek? Is that something you'd be interested in, James?
There is of the Star Trek?
Yeah.
No, of course. I mean, I think that would be great.
I like the idea.
I haven't watched Voyager in quite a while.
Really?
Mainly because a lot of the stuff on my rewatch at the moment is the stuff being re-released, so the remasters. So I recently had a rewatch of the original series, and then also Enterprise is going concurrently, and also TNG, of course, is going concurrently as well. So I haven't. Perhaps Voyager is the one that I'm most rusty on. But I'd always be up for that.
Which would be fine, because, I mean, that just gives you an excuse to watch them. But on the Lou Trek Show, we've actually went outside of Star Trek, and we've done a review on Galaxy Quest. What's the other one? Spaceballs, Space Cowboy. Just basically it's a space theme is what we were doing. So, it'd be interesting. Do you guys actually want us to do that? And if so... It'd be interesting to see which episodes outside of TNG that you would actually want us to do. So you could be the drivers in this one if you want. Tell us what you'd like. Okay, so the next comment, go ahead with Paul.
Yeah, it's from Paul. He said, another great review. Lou and James, together you make a great podcasting team as you bring totally different cards to the table. I mean, is that true?
Yes, sometimes.
I'm not aware enough to see whether that's true or not.
Well, we'll find out in this episode.
You know, this episode was not great, even for season one, but it did fertilize the soil of Trek with its stinking carcass as we got the Ferengi, although not the DS9 version, still the seed is there.
Mm-hmm. And they're still trying to make the Ferengi seem like the bad guys of the Klingons of TOS.
I think it's... I mean, as we mentioned in the last outpost, I think very quickly that got buried. And even at this point with the battle, as we'll discuss, I think a lot of this a lot of this already is off the table. A lot of it has fallen over into comic villain kind of territory.
Right.
But anyway, I suppose that concludes our feedback section.
Yep, that was for the last outpost. All right, so let's go ahead and jump into the battle. What do we have straight off? We've been kind of like nose-to-nose, side-to-side or whatever with the Ferengi ship for the last 3 days, and all they say is, stand by Enterprise. They wanted this meeting, but stand by Enterprise. Do you think maybe the episode harped on the fact that he was ordered to be there for the Ferengi, or else they would have just, screw them, let's go somewhere else?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they did make a big point, right, of this being, you know, they've been left waiting there, and I don't know. I think in the episode, it's really there just to be a way of explaining Picard's headache. What's a headache? Yeah. At the beginning of the show. I mean, had they been waiting for 3 days and, you know, perhaps 3 days of partying or 3 days of no work, surely there can't be too many people complaining.
Yeah, they just, you know, using the holodeck, eating the replicator. They're enjoying their 3 days. It's better than when Voyager went through the void. All right. Well, Picard's headache. You know, it's tough to be the hero of Maxia, as we'll find out later. So finally, the Ferengi come on the screen and they would like to meet. Would you like to come to your ship or mine? And what happens? Troy cuts off the Skype video chat because she senses considerable deception on Bok's part. How did she sense that?
Yeah, I mean, but well, she, yes, I mean, she's not supposed to be able to read the Ferengi in terms of mind read. But also, even if you think about reading minds, how does that work over the vacuum of space? I never quite got that. Maybe it does. And also, you know, writing a, what is it? The immunity syndrome doesn't Spock feel the Vulcans through the void of space, a bit like Obi-Wan Kenobi. I'm willing to give this a little bit of a pass because he's the Ferengi has operated in, you know, comic villain territory at this point.
Or what about Tam Elbrun? You know, he senses the thoughts, not just the emotions, but what everybody's saying and thinking. That's got to be torture. So
it's difficult to have time to yourself, right?
Right.
But I like the way. Well, I didn't like the way. I find it interesting the way that Troy does turn over to to Yar and says, "Cut off the communication." Yeah. And she's clearly on screen at the time. And from the Ferengi's point of view, she's not exactly hiding anything here.
No.
She's almost waving, saying, no, turn off.
Yeah.
And, Captain, I don't trust this dude.
Yeah, whereas Jason Nesmith says, you know, she gave him the kill gesture. Okay. So obviously Picard makes a wiser choice and have the Ferengi beam over to our ship because, you know, I'd be concerned that the Ferengi try to take over the ship because, as we're going to find out in later episodes, it's a fairly easy thing to do.
No, absolutely. And isn't when he announces that they're going to have the Ferengi over as guests, Worf reacts in a huge way. The Ferengi here? And I kind of was thinking, it's a bit of an overreaction, right?
To have yes.
A small boarding, you know, a small diplomatic boarding party to pop by and to discuss stuff. It's, you know, because what's the alternative? Picard and co. go over there? That's surely infinitely worse.
Yeah, it would
but,
be.
I mean, at this point, Worf's really not a, he's not a tolerant guy.
Right. All right. So, yeah, Dr. Crusher cannot figure out why Picard has a headache. But here's an interesting question. She gives him a, you know, little thing that goes on his forehead, and then poof, the headache's gone. But that didn't last long, did it? Because it comes right back.
Yeah, no, it's strange because it does come straight back, even though it's, you know, magic medicine that's supposed to take care of it. From Crusher's point of view, had I given, you know, the medicine or, you know, the whatever it was, and then, you know, the headache came back, really at that point you have to start asking serious questions, right? Which no one seems to do. They seem to keep the captain in a huge amount of pain, certainly towards the mid part of the episode. and it always gets written off as some type of a, you know, it's perfectly normal, it's just a headache. And what's your opinion of them using things like headaches and, you know, quote-unquote, the common cold? Because I always find it uncomfortable.
Really? Why?
Because it's almost, I think I always take it as being a nod. It's like a knowing nod from the 24th century to modern day life.
Yeah.
So that, and sometimes when they do that, I kind of think, why would these guys, you know, if the common cold had been cured and it's no longer on the radar, why would these guys even know about it?
Well, she has to go through medical history.
No, she does, sure. But, you know, I think there are far too many 20th century references in Star Trek. I mean, I don't think, I'm perhaps, you know, I'm happy to be corrected, but I don't think in our discussions we use many, you know, 16th century references.
No, not that I'm aware of.
But we might. Maybe we do.
Who knows? Well, I mean, Voyager didn't know what a pickup truck was.
Actually, by the way, I'm gonna retract all of this because I'm fully well aware that a large proportion of the modern day English language obviously dates back to Shakespeare. We're obviously having this big discussion about what, you know, almost anything you would say would probably first have been quoted in some type of Shakespeare text all those hundreds of years ago. So maybe, you know, maybe culturally speaking, the 20th century was such a fertile time that, you know, we still have these repercussions 400 years into the future.
Yeah,
so
maybe.
Let me dig myself out of that one quite quickly.
All right, Your Honor, strike that from the record. Okay, well, I mean, yeah. So they obviously are trying to say that they are more advanced in the 24th century, that they've cured the common cold. No one should get a headache because they've mapped the brain. That's an interesting part there, that they've mapped the brain. But I guess, you, on the other hand, nobody today suffers from polio when it was a killer in the past. So I suppose, you know, the idea of curing polio was completely out of reach. So why couldn't it be out of reach that they could cure a headache or the common cold? Because what's a common cold? It's a virus. If you just keep your hands clean and you sanitize your environment, you will never get the common cold.
No, I think that's a valid point. Although, I suppose maybe the equivalent now is going to the doctor and saying, hey doctor, I've just got a case of the Black Death. The Black Death? He said, yeah, surely you've heard of the Black Death. Said, yeah, I have, but you shouldn't really have it. I said, well, you know, I've had a lot of stress at work. Actually, also, one thing I liked, I'm saying I liked when I really want to say I noted, is that right when they're talking about the headaches at the beginning, Crusher states, he said, oh, you know, it's these games the Ferengi are playing. And Crusher says, what, they're playing games with your head? And then he should have said, perhaps they are. And they would have finished the episode, you know, 45 minutes early. Mm-hmm. Because she was right. He hit the nail on the head in the opening teaser that the Ferengi are playing games with his head. And
right.
No one took her seriously.
Right. There was a lot of chances that they could have solved this mystery. But, you know, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit and ask, since we know now that it was a Ferengi device that was doing it to them, and, you know, obviously the headache thought maker or the headache machine was on the Ferengi ship. How did the Ferengi know Picard's exact DNA so that it affected him and him only?
They don't. I'm not going to justify this.
Plot hole, in other words. Why, there had to be some lowly ensign Tommy on deck 22 that was also having headaches.
Yeah, and also, In what, okay, maybe it works on brain waves, and maybe brain waves are unique enough for every individual, so they have their own ones, sure. But I like to think that in addition to Picard having the headache, there are like 30 ensigns as well, bedbound, because they're having this horrendous headache, and they're not taken seriously because they're not the captain.
Right.
And that's his name. Said, ah, my head.
Maybe Dr. Salar is busy taking care of all them people. Crusher's got the captain.
Yeah.
The only person who can give him an order. Actually, I don't think that's true. I mean, she can order him in times when she can prove that he's mentally unfit. But just go to your quarters order? Could she really do that?
Well, there's a bit that comes up a fair bit later, but maybe I'll raise it now when Picard's clearly, you know, he's tired and he's still got the headache, and without Picard asking or agreeing, Crusher just gives him a hyper spray of something that knocks him out for 12 hours. And I was thinking, did she get permission for that? Does she need permission for that? You know, you can imagine going to the doctor and saying, oh, I've got a bad case of, you know, whatever it might be. And he says, well, you know, I'm not going to tell you anything. He stabs something into your leg, injects you, and you say, what was that? And then thump, you're out for the next 2 days cold.
You mean doctors in the UK don't do that? When I go to the doctor, doesn't matter what it is, if I've got, you know, I've got some kind of respiratory virus, even sinus issues, he'll prescribe up to 3 shots, and I have no idea what they are. He could be injecting me with arsenic, and I have no idea. I'm just pulling my pants down a little bit, and he gets my big fat hip, and they one in each side. I don't know what he's giving me. So do they have to tell you what you're getting over there?
Well, I'm just surprised you can knock out a captain without having discussed it with him.
I'd like to know why that we can't do that now. I mean, you ever have a night of insomnia where, damn it, you just can't sleep no matter what you try? Wouldn't it be nice to get a hypospray?
So effectively, the knockout hyperspray or the off-button hyperspray that becomes such a common feature in later seasons.
Mm-hmm. I would love that.
Might be worthwhile.
Mm. I guess you can't do this on your own. Or the, what are those things you put on your head?
Hats?
No. Silly. No, I mean, it's the little devices they put on your forehead that knock you out instantly.
Are we talking Star Trek, or are we talking
Star Trek.
Oh, the neural... It's neural because of the head and then something or other. That
maybe stimulator is one, but no, you're right. I mean, what if you had those on your own and you just kind of slap them on your own head, but there's nobody there to wake you up or take them off? That would be a dangerous thing to do. Okay. So anyway, Wesley in his rainbow jumper breezes onto the bridge to report an intruder alert. It's another Starfleet Wessel. So what do you think of Wesley's rainbow jumper?
So is this the first time we see the rainbow jumper?
No, I don't think it is, but it's the first time we talked about it.
Yeah, I am... okay, honestly, I don't mind the rainbow jumper, but the thing I always notice about it, and I don't know why, it's just a detail that I notice, on the side, on one of the shoulders, where it has the 3 stripes, they cross over, and they cross back again.
Mm-hmm.
And I always notice that pattern for some reason. You know, I'm not a big hater of the jumper, so I can, yeah, I don't mind it. And I have 2 myself.
What's that?
And I have 2 myself.
Of those?
No, of course I don't. I'm just
Lord. Connected. I fell for that one. Okay, well, the only thing I'm wondering about is why would he wear that every day, though?
Well, I mean, in a way, the we're getting. Yeah, I mean, of course, he shouldn't. But we're fundamentally getting into the issue of, you know, of TV production and the fact that if you have your characters out of their normal quote unquote uniform, it's going to be harder for you to identify the right show. And I think that's probably one of the main reasons why you're in uniform at all, right?
Yeah.
So if you can get guys in uniform, and it's a standard. There, it becomes iconic, and then you don't have to worry about people, you know, missing the show or whatnot. And it's even outside of sci-fi, you will see a lot of people wear at least similar clothes, or at least be highly stylized in a very similar way week to week, just so that you can quickly identify the show as your, you know, as your channel surfing. But yeah,
okay.
Hopefully he's got more than one of them, and hopefully there's an efficient washing system on the Enterprise that keeps them clean.
Yeah, he has a few of them. Okay, let's see where we are here. So the Ferengi beam over, and as I said, they're still kind of hunched. But not
as bad as last time.
Not as bad. No, not as bad as last time. And what do they want to do? They want to buy data. They want to purchase it.
That made me smile, right?
Yeah.
Because as we mentioned on, as I mentioned on the last Outpost, I do not see how they can marry this combination of being a villain and also being so into profit. I just don't see how they manage it. And so in my opinion, they've just gone into comedy world now.
Right.
But, you know, they are behaving like, you know, latter-day Ferengi when they start thinking, you know, when you come across data, you want to buy him because he's, you know, he's an android. You haven't seen an android before.
Yeah.
And I kind of, you know, I like that.
Yep. But he's secondhand merchandise.
Yes. Certainly since Tasha was through with him.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point, too. But a clothed female.
I wish they would stop doing that, though. It's a little bit of a... It's a bit weird.
Especially when you looked at the shape of Mugi. The flabby skin. And I could have done without the unclothed female, I'll be honest. So I don't understand why, you know, the whole notion of an entire civilization where the women are completely naked as being normal. I don't know. What do I know?
And then we see the water. We see the Stargazer. I suppose plot-wise, a ship has been approaching. That's the perimeter alert or the intruder alert that Wesley identified.
Right.
And the Stargazer, which is Picard's old ship, comes into view. What are your thoughts on Stargazer? You know, on the design of the thing? Because this is the first time we've seen this particular class of starship.
I have a hard time figuring out how that could go to warp. I don't know. Maybe I'm used to the traditional warp nacelles on the sides of the ship. I don't know. The Stargazer just looked a little different to me.
That's strange. I'm quite a fan of the design because it is. I mean, it is unique, right? It's the first time we've seen like four nacelles. I think that it's, you know, it clearly looks, you know, smaller, old, you know, whatever it happens to be.
Yeah,
and I quite like the ship, and I think not now, but obviously later in the season, later in the series, you start seeing the little model of the Stargazer appear in Picard's ready room.
Right.
Because up until this point, I don't think there's. Well, I'm sure I'll be corrected on what there is, but the Stargazer doesn't appear until later.
Mm. Yeah, and I'm looking at a picture of it, and it looks like there aren't some nacelles on the top, but are there some on the bottom as well?
Well, I mean, I think the four things that are popping out are supposed to be nacelles.
So if it has four warp nacelles, I suppose I can really travel pretty fast.
Yeah, well.
Oh, no, you're not going to give me another lesson on speed.
I have nothing... I mean, it happens to have four warp nacelles.
Yeah.
Whatever that means, I don't know.
They have to have bigger dilithium crystals or more unleaded gasoline. I don't know. So
it's like four exhaust yeah. on a car. It
that
does
makes sense.
Does very little.
Very little. Okay, so Bach is giving the Stargazer to Picard at no cost. Ugly. Very ugly. That's what I mean by I like the fact that Ferengi are different than the whipping boys, I guess you can call them, and they're now more geared toward profit.
Yeah, I mean, not only have we picked up on the profit side, which in fairness was in the last Outpost, but I think it's here more. You know, certainly people talk about, you know, surely the Ferengi always make a profit on every transaction, and you know, Riker communicates with their first officer and like, you know, pokes him on that. But I think that in particular, the first and second officer, so not Damon Bock, but the other guys, they are, I think they're more comedic in this.
Yes.
The idea of sitting there saying, ugly, very ugly. It's not, you know, people aren't terrified of these aliens turning up, you know, next week.
Right.
So in my opinion, we've already, if it ever existed, we've discarded the fact that these guys were a threat.
Yeah, right. That's pretty much a done deal. But, you know, I like the look on their faces, Kazago and Rata. You know, they're smiling and grinning, and all of a sudden when Bok starts to talk about giving it to him for free, their head's almost like, huh? And they're staring at him with their wide eyes. They can't believe this is happening. I think that was hilarious.
Yeah. I think it's, I enjoy the Ferenginess.
Mm-hmm. And you never show your opponent any weakness, right? But Picard can't handle it. He just gets a big whopping headache that even Troy says, I felt that time too. And do you ever notice when somebody calls for sick bay or a transporter room, they look up at the ceiling?
I have not.
Yep, Riker does that, you know. Bridge to sick bay. He looks up because he's going to call sick bay up for Picard. And I thought about that when he looked up. I thought, do they do that all the time? You know, bridge to sick bay, bridge to transporter room. Like, what are you looking up for? I don't know. It's just something I noticed.
No, I suppose you're speaking to someone that's not in the room with you, and
yeah,
it's kind of like a disconnected voice. So maybe there's a, you know, maybe actually, you know, maybe people do that. You know, if you're on a conference call or something, maybe it's a bit of a reflex when you don't have anyone around you to focus on.
Right.
But no, I hadn't noticed that per se.
Oh, okay. Right. Well, keep that in your brain there for a while. Don't lose any sleep over it. But
I do like, by the way, how you know when Picard does have his headache. I like the line that when Bok puts forward, he said, "Oh, maybe it's his conscience." Speaking, getting to him, like that, I did think was relatively, you know, nicely done.
Plus, it was significant. Nobody picks up on that. There's something going on here, but he had this headache way before the Stargazer ever came into view. So, yeah, he plays the headache pretty good, though. Actually, so Picard is having semi-hallucinations at some point in this episode, a couple times, but yet he's still fit to work.
Yeah, I would have thought that what would have happened, or what I would like to have happened, you know, this is how the episode should have ended, is that, you know, Picard says, look, I've got this really, really bad headache. You know, write me off for the next 2 weeks or so. I'm going to let Riker be in charge of these things. So he goes to bed, stays out of the way, Riker sorts whatever needs to be sorted out, and you carry on, and none of this actually happens the way, you know, the way the episode goes. Really, the only reason why there's any threat or any, you know, any danger in the episode is because Picard stubbornly stays in the position of power, and people aren't acting quick enough to remove him so that he doesn't hurt everyone. And it's kind of similar to Lonely Among Us a couple of weeks ago, when you could see clearly that there was a compromised Picard, uh-huh, and everyone just stood around going, well, he's the captain, so yeah, let's hope he doesn't kill us.
Right.
I would like to believe there's something more in place to prevent these type of things happening.
Mm. Okay. All right, so Picard reminisces about the past and actually thinks he's in the moment, still fit for duty. I mean, he's in the conference room, you know, think, Viggo, think, with our shields down. Well, I'm sure I'm getting into this, ain't I? I don't know. I think he should have taken a break, but obviously then the whole story would be a little different. So the Ferengi hand over the keys and title to the Stargazer, and they warp off into their own world. Oh, wait, no, they don't. No, for some reason, they just stick around. It's almost like they're waiting for something. And nobody says, why are they still here?
No, that's true. And I mean, not only are they hanging around when you'd expect them not to, there's the bit at the end, as we get towards the end of the episode, where they basically just call in and say, right, that's us for this week. Bye.
Goodbye.
And they get out of there in about 2 seconds flat, because story no longer needs them to be there.
Right.
And it's, yeah, if they just keep an eye on what kind of ships are hanging around, I think, you know, the crew would be a couple of steps further ahead than they actually are.
The captain's got a headache. There's a Ferengi out there giving us a one of our ships. Why they have it, or how it drifted there, is none of my concern. Okay, so we download all the files to the Enterprise, even the ones that make Picard seem like a murderer. And, of course, Bach already knew that.
Yes, no, he does. Now, I think, by the way, I think at this point, I've got some notes that I think the episode is progressing too fast in a way, and that's perhaps something weird. So let me try to explain. I think that if we had been later in Star Trek, we would probably have had a B plot that would have kind of padded out the episode. Whereas in this episode, we don't. We only have the main A plot. And I think that you can see that things start being thrown in the way of the A-plot to slow it down. In particular, you know, people going over to the Stargazer and then, you know, the stuff about the log being faked and so on is just put there effectively just to stumble across on the A-plot to slow it down by 6 or 7 minutes.
Uh-huh.
I think by the time Picard goes over to Stargazer, has a look around, and then and you start seeing Damon Bock with his big machine causing the headaches, I think you're no more than 15, 16 minutes in. And it's moving far too fast. And I think that's something that wouldn't have happened later on in the season.
No.
Later on in the series. And I think that's something that is, you know, it's weird to say, but I think that this guy, I don't think there's enough material there to make the A-plot, you know, take the entire 45 minutes, and as a result, I think you start putting up these vague threats that you just dismiss in a couple of scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there's a lot of padding on the headache and whatnot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know, the Ferengi has had possession of the Stargazer. Obviously, that means the Ferengi have been on the ship. So, you know, didn't anyone think to maybe go through Picard's things before they just transferred it over from the Stargazer, you know, like that fairly heavy chest, you know, for maybe bombs, vagrants, Ferengi stowaways, lost pets, rotting and decaying bodies, mind-altering devices? No, let's just pick it up and take it back to the Enterprise.
And I love the way that Worf... At the end of the episode, as they're trying to have a bit of a think about whether there's anything on the Enterprise that could be causing this, he does say, there was this heavy chest, as if the fact that it's heavy suggests that, whoa, there could have been anything in there. We didn't check.
Yeah.
So it is, you know, I think your criticism is completely fair. You surely would have checked, certainly if there's these large glowing spheres that look like they could be dangerous.
How did they get it over? Did they bring it over on a shuttle, or did they beam it over? And isn't the transporter supposed to be looking for electronic devices that are emitting energy waves? I certainly think that should have gotten their attention, that TSA might have been on it today. Who knows? Well, maybe not.
No, absolutely. And also, I do have a note that when you start seeing Damon Bock and he's got his own one of these things, and you have a lot of scenes with him basically just looking at a monitor screen and, you know, spouting out a few like evil phrases.
It
reminded me very much of a Ming the Merciless from Flash Gordon. He's just sitting behind his like control panel, laughing in a kind of, you know, in a weird way. You're putting across straight away that this is an evil dude and he's doing something.
Yeah, take this, hero of Maxia. Okay, so anyway, you know, grinds the screw a little bit worse in the brain. Okay, so now we have the official possession of the Stargazer, and Picard comes to the bridge pretty much half dazed. Again, is he fit for duty? Not sure. Riker and Troy just know there's something wrong, but just like you said, lonely among us, they do nothing about it. They just, you know, go ahead and release the Stargazer, put her on her own, because her inertia will follow her, right? Okay, so do you know a lot about space and the inertia thing? Would it really just follow the same path it was in? It doesn't, you know, slightly go up or down or to the side. It would actually follow?
Okay. Do you want a real answer here?
Yeah, give me the Cliff's Notes.
Okay, so, first of all, they don't mean inertia. They mean momentum. So that's the first thing.
Okay.
And the second thing is that, okay, as long as you're traveling in a straight line, you can let go of it and it'll be fine. It'll follow you. But I assume the Enterprise isn't traveling in a straight line. I assume that they're going to make a course correction and make sure they didn't get blown up by a space rock or something like that. So it is, I think it's suspicious, to say the least, that that you would let go of the let go of the leash in a way. Even if you think your dog's going to follow you, you potentially need to have control if you're if you're expecting to have to move or suddenly do something that might not be expected by the guy that's following you. So at this point, when Riker gets asked to turn off the tractor beam, and I think by this point even Troy has put forward the warnings that she senses something else in Picard's brain, something mechanical. Uh-huh. And everyone's just saying, "Well, yeah, well, there we go." at this point, Riker should say, "Do you know what? We're not going to do that because I would be incompetent at my job if I were to do this. So let's see this through with the with the Ferengi. Not least the Ferengi are sitting next to you, and they could put a tractor beam on the guy and take him away and." You don't know. You don't just leave this thing idling by in space.
But another question is, how long would it actually follow you? Would it get slower and slower until it finally stops? Or would it just continue on forever until it's acted on by an outside force?
Well, it should technically flow in a straight line forever, as long as there's no resistance against it, which isn't quite true. There will be resistance against it.
Oh, yeah.
And also, when you say there's no external force, of course, if you're in a solar system or something like that, there is, of course, external forces. So this thing can go in a straight line and then be pulled into a star.
Uh-huh.
So the fact that it hasn't got any... The fact that no force is acting on it means it goes in a straight line. It doesn't mean that there are no forces acting on it. That you're going into a solar system, this thing's going to be whipped around like no one's business, and it could just be pulled into a star or into an atmosphere if it's not taking, if it's not using its engines to move it to a safe location.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that, no one should have agreed to this.
Okay. All right. Well, Data finds a personal log that makes him out to be a liar. Personal log is a confession in his own voice that says he mistook the other ship's subspace antenna for a weapons cluster. Don't we establish later on that nobody can listen to anybody else's personal log?
I don't know. Do we?
I
always thought that there was... you could always do clearance to...
you could.
To get to personal logs.
Yeah, generally it's the captain that has to release that clearance. So maybe, we don't know, but Picard said, yeah, go ahead and listen to all you want. It doesn't matter. I've got nothing to hide. Oops.
Oh, who is it that ends up listening to something like 15 days worth of personal logs and stays up with coffee? I think it might be O'Brien in Deep Space Nine. I seem to remember that it's in Whispers when he gets replaced by a robot. And he sits there listening to personal logs all night. And I think he has to... he's technically asked for clearance, but he knows the way around it, which is great security.
Oh.
But I think you might be right. I think you probably at least need to ask permission.
And somebody... it seemed to me that it also happened on Voyager, where somebody got into someone else's personal logs and was admonished by Janeway for it. I wish the android were here, because he'd know exactly what I was talking about. And okay,
I actually quite the kind of like this little bump in the road in terms of putting a question mark over Picard is raised and then kind of dismissed so quickly that I would have actually preferred had the log that they found being in, not like in Picard's own voice, but in like a Picard comedy voice, because it doesn't provide any, you know, it's only a small bump in the road. They dismiss it very quickly. So I would have much preferred it to have clearly been the Ferengi trying to impersonate Picard. Sitting there saying, oh, yes, we mistook the... Or make it so that maybe it's Picard's voice, but it's so clearly made up of different clips. And, you know, maybe an odd word here or there thrown in from someone else.
Or like it's been degraded a little bit and they had to retrieve it. Or it was, you know, what Bach should have done was attempted to delete it so that somebody else could find it. That would have made it more plausible. But another thing, like you say, they just dismiss it outright. Well, they're only 9 episodes into this series. They really don't know Picard very well. He may have actually did this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if you we later learn of Riker's kind of, you know, time in Starfleet and how he was under when he was under Pressman, you know, he's been with some relatively dodgy captains. So yeah. there's no reason for Riker to start thinking that this captain he's only known for the last 4 months or whatever it might have been is a good one.
Okay, so Riker has to tell on Picard, which gives them 2 more days to get to the truth. What do you think of the first officer to first officer thing?
I thought that worked okay, to be honest. I thought that was perfectly fine. And you're in the territory, right, where there's the fact that Riker can talk to the Ferengi, they're clearly not a threat at this point. So I think it's fine. And, you know, yes, as I mentioned, you see Riker like poking the Ferengi about, you know, I thought that you guys were waste for profit and things like that. And you're beginning to have a play around with these guys already.
Right. We freely give you your derelict ship and you accuse us of crimes, Riker? Yeah, okay. So Picard goes to bed. Crusher puts him to bed, like you said. But it doesn't, again, the medicine doesn't last long because the memories start to bubble up and it's just like he's in experiencing this in real life. So what does he do? He gets up to relive the past. Did you notice on the Stargazer reliving, I guess you could say, I guess it was like a ghost image, all the fire that was around them? I wonder if it would have been like that in real life where the woman and the man are sitting at their consoles and there's fire directly right in front of them.
I mean, I think it would have been dangerous had it been so close.
Yeah, that's hot.
Yeah, and I mean, had it been in that position, you hopefully can transfer command to another terminal.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, can I have the not-so-warm chair? And I'll take command from just over here, okay. So I don't barbecue myself.
All right. How good are you on computers and units of measurement on computers?
Oh, I have no idea. Go on.
Okay.
What are you testing?
Well, Data is giving a computer lesson about how the log was forged. There's some checksum discrepancies, and when the bits, when totaled, produce an aggregate amount, and then we get cut off at that point about who doesn't want a computer science lesson, but. What does he mean by all that? The bits, when totaled, produce an aggregate amount. In other words, the file size is bigger or smaller than what it should have been.
Okay. Without wanting to get hate mail, I interpret it as being the whenever you do like an MPEG broadcasting, you always have a certain number of check bits part of the data feed. Basically to tell you whether or not you've received all of the information. So you send all of the information and you send some additional information so they know that it's correct. I got the impression he was talking about that.
Oh.
So I was under the impression that the stream of data that lives above the main, you know, audio was inconsistent between the clips. That's what I got away from. That's okay. What I took away from that. But yeah. I'm gonna start shutting up on this stuff soon.
Yeah, there's got to be a computer geek out there somewhere that can explain that to us. So feel free to correct us or tell us what that means. So the captain strolls onto the bridge, wide-eyed and ready for duty, just after Crusher put him to bed. Okay, I got here. First things first. Before we can go any further. Everyone out but Riker. Well, you know, with the protest, by the way. Release the Stargazer from the director beam. Number three. How much power do you think the tractor beam really uses that we need to conserve its energy? I was always under the assumption that the ship just pretty much reproduces its own energy. It's not like they pull over to the starbase and fill up, do they?
No. Absolutely. With Riker being told to turn off the tractor beam, I think he was incompetent to turn it off.
Yeah.
There's just no other way of saying it. Yeah. You know, you might as well turn off the lights on the bridge as you're leaving. I don't think there's any energy drain from it. Well, you're never given the impression that there's energy drain from it.
Okay. But Troy, again, senses two sets of random thoughts, just like a Lonely Among Us.
And if we've learned nothing from 2 weeks ago, which we haven't, we'll just leave it.
Right. There's some kind of duality. She even says it again. There's some kind of duality. Well, the last time, you know, he beamed out energy only when she was sensing a duality. When is she ever going to get this right?
I think there should be a stand in order. Whenever you sense duality, close down the transporter rooms.
Yes.
Because he's going to try to escape.
Right. Okay, so the Rainbow Jumper runs in again and says that the brain scans of Picard's are the same of what's coming out of the Ferengi ship. Are you serious? You know, who should we be firing at this point when the kid actually determines that there's signals coming out of the Ferengi ship that correlate to what the brain scans that Picard's experiencing? Somebody's got to lose their job for not noticing that.
I suppose this might be like the third chief engineer in a row. Yeah. That's why we got through so many chief engineers in the first season. But I did enjoy this. As I said, what I noted about this is that Wesley runs in, and he runs in basically with the entire answer. He has the full explanation of what's going on and how it's happening. And he runs in so that he can do the exposition. But he runs in too late, so any action can be taken.
Yes, of course.
So you have this, and so I quite, you know, I enjoy that, and you see, you know, how old was Wesley at this point? 13, something like that.
14 or 15, maybe.
So, well, the young boy speaks to Crusher and Troy, and then Crusher and Troy basically go up to the bridge, and they basically repeat exactly what he said. And then there's a bit where Troy turns to Crusher and said, did he say low intensity?
Yes.
And you could just tell that they don't even know what he was talking about. They're just repeating what Crusher had just told them, or what Wesley Crusher had just told them, you know, minutes before in sickbay.
But you would think, I still want to fire somebody. Somebody's got to be fired. You could rehire him later if you want, but somebody's got to be fired. Crusher sees these brain scans. The sensors are continually scanning the Ferengi ship. Why does nobody put it together? Somebody's got to be fired. So you're going to have to fire someone, James.
Well, I think, that, to be honest, I'm mainly aimed at the moment at Troy, given the fact that she clearly mentions duality, and she clearly mentions, I think it's even almost a mechanical duality that's in there.
Yep.
It's, you know, I think that the guy being fired this week will be Troy in my mind.
All right, you're done. Okay. Imzadi, I'm sorry, but you're done. Okay, well, anyway. So, Picard can beam out anytime he wants, right?
Yep.
I mean, I guess he gets to decide who beams out. There's no safeguards, you know, transporter to Riker, the captain is beaming out unexpectedly, what do I do here? Just, yes sir, yeah, go ahead and head over anytime you want.
But also the other thing was that when Riker asked where was Captain Picard, they said, Captain Picard's in the transporter room, and he goes, oh okay, that's okay. And then 2 seconds later, oh, we've got new information. He's no longer on the ship. What? Oh, we didn't see that one coming.
No.
I mean, surely as soon as you know that he's in the transporter room, you emergency shut down the transporters.
Right. And you can't just beam him back? Because it takes, we go over to the Stargazer where Bach raises the shields. Wasn't there a moment where they could have just beamed him right back?
And also, you should have had scans on the Stargazer so that you knew whether there was anyone on the Stargazer.
Got it. That's my next point. How does Bach get on the Stargazer? Wouldn't anybody on the Enterprise have noticed that? Again, somebody should be fired for that, too. Anyway, I guess maybe who's the one that handles the sensors at this point? Is that Tasha or Worf?
Well, it's Tasha.
Okay.
I mean, is that true? Is sensors from? I think certainly some sensors are there, right?
Even the ops position has sensors, and Data does a lot of sensor work too.
Yeah, so you should have scans from security, certainly looking at the ships and making sure, knowing the arms of the ships and the tactical position, but also ops should have sensors as well. Right. And, even the comms should have certain sensor access so they know where they're going. So, I think it's a triple firing this week.
We may need a whole new crew. So, Bach is collecting on an old debt. Well, I don't know about over in the UK, but I think torture is against the Federal Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. I don't know. Do you have such a thing? What could debt collectors do over there that they can't?
You'll be surprised.
Oh, really? Right. Well, they still do it here. I mean, we have companies that violate federal law on a daily basis. But anyway, so let's see. And you mentioned the low-intensity beam that took him 35 minutes to realize that was going on. So this whole thing is about Bach's son, Daemon of the ship that attacked the Stargazer 9 years ago. And this is Daddy's revenge. So he spent a whole lifetime of profits to create two headache machines. And I already asked the question, why didn't they affect everyone else? And how does Bach get so much on Picard's brain chemistry? Okay, we can go past that page. Next one. First officer to first officer. What is going on? What's this thing here? And of course, what does he come back with? If your captain is criminal enough to have that. So, okay, sure.
I thought that was quite nice. Because you can clearly tell. It's very Ferengi, right? It's very similar to how I would imagine the Ferengi, even at the end of DS9, would behave. You present them with something, and they immediately turn it around. The way he turned it around said, "Did you know anything about this?" As whoa, if your captain's criminal enough to be using this illegal Ferengi technology, then that's his problem. Now it's clearly not come from Picard; it's clearly come from them. But they're they have this ability to turn everything against you and. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I quite like that. It's the Ferengi we know and love.
Yes, absolutely. So, Troy now knows what's been going on. He's reliving the past. Oh, the Picard maneuver. And at first Data says there's no defense, but he's able to whip up one pretty quick.
I'm a little bit confused by, so what has happened now is that, the Ferengi have said bye and they've disappeared. Picard's reliving his old life on the Stargazer, and he's going to do the Picard maneuver on the Enterprise. So I'm just confused as how he is able to do this. He doesn't have a crew. He's talking to the computer. I would imagine that you wouldn't be able to get this done in an automated way. That the ship is an old ship. I just didn't quite get why this posed a threat. And certainly while they are waiting, couldn't they have just disabled the Stargazer with a phaser?
That's what I would have thought.
Bang! Oh, he's no longer. This idea that we're going to sit around and wait for a while for him to do the Picard maneuver, of which there is no defense. That's clearly nonsense. I would imagine that what you do, because as Riker mentioned at the beginning. They do the Picard maneuver and they fire at the wrong one. Well, fire at the other one.
Yeah.
Or fire at both of them.
Both of them.
You've got more than one torpedo tube. Fire at both of them. I think this is a pretty easy thing to get out of. And I'm no tactical genius.
You know, one thing I am curious about, when the Stargazer, you know, was in two places at one time, they put a tractor beam on the second location, because obviously he was over to the right, and now it's directly in front of us, put a tractor beam on that. Could the Stargazer really hurt the Enterprise?
Actually, that's another thing that I felt. I felt that even if the Stargazer came along and unloaded everything they could, I think with shields on, you know, you're probably fine, right?
You would think.
And they've mentioned in the past you probably wouldn't be firing photons that close anyway, and so it's probably just a phaser, phaser array. I don't think they would have been in any real danger.
Okay, that's what I figured too.
And actually, I mean, there are two things that I'd like to say about the the Picard maneuver. To me, it seemed like once it had warped, it kind of hung around for a second or two, not doing anything, before they actually tractor-beamed it. So to me, that kind of removed any kind of threat. It was like the maneuver was over and Picard didn't do anything. And I know that they tractor-beamed them as soon as they could, but it wasn't exactly that he came out all guns blazing.
That's a good point, because even after the maneuver happened and they were in both places at the same time, Riker was putting on the tractor beam, Picard was still saying, prepare to fire.
Yeah, I think frankly, the entire maneuver dies because that's too slow at firing at the other end. And then the final point about the maneuver, which is, it's about Data's solution to the maneuver, is putting on the tractor beam. It just reminded me of, I don't know if, you know, when you have like a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old child that wants to come up to you and beat you, and you hold their head and you hold them at arm's length, and they can't quite get you, but you can hold them.
Yeah.
To me, that's exactly what the Enterprise was doing to the Stargazer. I'm just going to hold you a little bit further away than you can do any damage, and just stay there until you calm down.
Right. That's an interesting, but that's a good analogy there. Yeah, because he says he limit their field of fire by putting the tractor beam on them. Okay. So Bach gets relieved of duty because of this unprofitable adventure.
Yep, and they're out of there. They're out of there without saying goodbye.
Yes. I think Riker and Kasago could have had a deeper relationship. You know, they could have at least been pen pals. Keep in touch. What's your email address? Kasago at FerengiAlliance.com. Okay. So Riker finally gets through to Picard and gets him to destroy the sphere, which, basically throws Picard to the ground. Not to get weird on you, but did you notice the Picard butt cheek wiggle when he's falling?
I didn't.
You didn't?
I didn't, no. I'm going to have to go back.
Yeah, there you go. Things you never would have thought of until you met me. Okay, so. Here's a question. My final question and my final observation of the whole episode. I can throw my notes away. Why do people walk to their beam out position? Why can't the transporter just beam them from where they're standing? Why do they have to leave this area, walk up about 7 feet, and then turn around and wait for the transporter to beam them up?
They don't. It's just the way they do it.
Okay.
And also, you don't have to all be together, right?
No.
If you're beaming up 6 people, you can be beamed up in 6 different places.
You would think.
And you probably don't have to be beamed down together either.
Yeah. No. And it's funny because when they beam up, they also when they get together, they look at the ground as to find where their mark was supposed to be. Okay, I'm supposed to be here. No, Wesley, come over here. I'm supposed to be over there. What would happen if they beamed out of order? Does LaForge beam up in Wesley's body? You clearly don't have an answer for that. So.
I don't. There are some things that are just beyond anything I can come up with.
All right. Okay. Well, then, is there anything else we need to discuss on this?
I've got one final thing to say on this, which is we get a sequel to this episode.
Yes. Yeah, this is part one of two.
So in the seventh season, you know, obviously Damon Buck's revenge hasn't quite been sorted out, and you know, from his perspective, and he comes back and tries to get Picard again, and it's strange. I mean, I would have thought we had exhausted this by now, but nope, he is back, and pop back to the Battle Bridge in 6 years' time, and we'll be just getting onto that one.
He means 6 seasons' time, so. And Bach is played by a different person, isn't he? I think.
Ooh, I didn't know that. I don't know if that is... I mean, I was not aware of that.
Lee Ehrenberg plays Bach in the future. Fascinating. Yeah, I think Bach is... Yeah, Bach is played by a different person. Oh, Lee Ehrenberg plays quite a bit, actually. Oh, Controller Pelk on Voyager. Is it Controller or Comptroller? The Melon? Anyway.
I thought the Melon were great.
Yeah. You seem to be leaking.
I thought they were... I think in fairness, if you ever got out into deep space, I think you're probably more likely to come across people like the Melon than you are to come across people like the Vulcans.
Yeah.
So I think the idea that you can come across these enlightened races that are going to help you is probably not true. You're likely to end up with people that are using deep space as a dumping ground for whatever radioactive nonsense they're producing.
Right.
So those guys always tickled me. Okay, it's now time to give a rating for this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Now, I've actually thought about this. I've actually probably changed my mind as we've been discussing, I'm afraid. I've probably taken it a notch down. I do enjoy this episode for what it is, which is fundamentally just a bit of fun. There's nothing hugely important being said. It's not a huge amount of development for any of the characters. I mean, even Picard's relationship with the Stargazer, I think, yes, you learn a little bit about it, but it's not exactly groundbreaking. I've always found this episode to be enjoyable, but relatively shallow. I think that the entire storyline could have been handed over to a different alien race rather than the Ferengi, with only a small number of rewrites. You know, remove profit and put in honor, and then you probably could have had Klingons. So I think this is a so-so episode. I rate it a 3 out of 5.
Okay.
And what about you, Lou?
I agree with you. I think the story is pretty lacking. The fact that nobody is figuring Picard is suffering, Picard is not right. It's a mechanical duality that we're just not picking up on, but he is a captain, so we're just going to let him do whatever he wants. We'll just follow his orders and hope for the best. It's all about revenge with the Ferengi, the one Ferengi. I do like Kasago and Rita. I do like their reactions. They are the true Ferengi that we come to know. Ugly, very ugly. But like you say, the story is just kind of like, this is one I could probably take or leave. We could think of a whole bunch of races that this would have been better for revenge than the Ferengi. But on the other hand, Ferengis aren't known for their revenge or known for their profit, so there was no profit in this, and I think that's why they selected them. So, in all, I probably, I'll go the middle of the road, too. I'll give it a 3 as well.
Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Can any of you stay alive?
The crew's challenged once again by the dreaded Q.
We have offered you a gift beyond all other gifts.
Tempting Commander Riker with extraordinary power.
Are you strong enough to refuse to use that power?
In a game.
Worf!
That becomes a deadly confrontation. On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for listening. Join us next week as we review Season 1, Episode 10, and that is Hide and Cue. So I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Take care and good night.